The Behind the Buy podcast features audio stories told by members of the federal acquisition workforce who have successfully executed best practice IT contracting strategies from the TechFAR and Digital Services Playbook to help their agency meet its mission.
Hi everyone, I'm Ann Rung, Administrator of the Office of Federal Procurement Policy. Joining us today for the administration's Behind the Buy audio series is Tara Jamison, a contracting officer from the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau, and she previously worked at the Department of the Navy. Welcome, Tara.
Well, thank you for having me.
So, Tara, it's interesting that you worked at the Department of the Navy and you grew up in a military household. So what was that like?
It was an amazing experience growing up, being able to travel. Both my parents joined the service. My dad went on to retire from the Army. And my mom and brother still work for the Navy, so we're very connected to the military and service members, and it was great being able to work for the Department of the Navy.
So we're going to talk to you today about an agile and iterative procurement solution that actually saved American lives. And you worked on a procurement for a technology that helped counter the impact of roadside bombs. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. It was an experience that I'll never forget. It was very connected to the mission. It was very meaningful. We were charged with procuring technology that would save lives, and we did accomplish that to a great extent. We were able to decrease the casualties that they were experiencing over in Iraq and Afghanistan.
So these are roadside devices or IEDs, and you were procuring a technology to really counter the impact of that. Is that correct?
Yes, that was the need and requirement that we were trying to address, the program office and also some other stakeholders.
So that was the specific challenge that the Navy was trying to address through this procurement?
Well, so we were facing increasing casualties in both Operation Enduring Freedom and in Operation Iraqi Freedom. The roadside bombs accounted for roughly 41% of casualties that they were experiencing. The combatants and insurgents that were there were using cellular telephones and other devices to kind of remotely detonate these devices. And as the contracting officer in support of the Joint Counter Radio Controlled Improvised Explosive Device Electronic Warfare Program, J-Crew for short, we were tasked with deploying some immediate solutions to counter these IEDs and procuring jammers that would actually block the radio frequency that were triggering these roadside bombs.
So this was not only a really important acquisition, but there was a real sense of urgency around it. So how did you use the rapid development and deployment strategy to really streamline the acquisition?
So the J-Crew program office that I worked with actually supported the Joint IED Defeat Organization, which reported directly to the Deputy Defense Secretary. And the acquisition strategy that we undertook was to acquire these jammer platforms that could be worn by the soldiers and also mounted to their armed vehicles or fixed on structures. The radio frequency at the time did exist, or the technology, but not in the format that we needed in order to meet the needs and protect the service members. And so we sought out to do a broad agency announcement for whatever commercial technology existed at the time that could meet our need. And then we went on to award letter contracts to do immediate testing on what those solutions were. And then from that point on, did limited competitions to award test and evaluation contracts, research and development contracts, and then went on to production with some of the solutions that we thought were worthwhile. So the technology was developed in spirals, essentially. So we had the 2.1, 3.1, 3.2, and then the system of systems, which was a larger system set for 3.3. And all the contracts were focused on exercising options to further the technology development.
So when you began the acquisition, you didn't really have a sense of the technology that you would need. And you went out to industry to really get a sense of what was in the commercial marketplace. And is that correct?
That is. Industry Days actually played a very important role in that process. We had them very frequently. They were critical because we faced a new threat and technology that we didn't have commercial off-the-shelf technology to address. And so we did a lot of targeted engagement with industry. It actually facilitated the teaming and collaboration among the vendors because they'd not previously worked on technology of that sort. And then it also allowed for feedback and information exchange between the government and industry, best practices, strategies, potential solutions that we may not have thought of.
So in the end, you chose a commercial solution. What were some of the reasoning behind that?
So the idea, I mean, I think if we had the luxury of time, we probably would have developed something from scratch, but we had an immediate need and an urgent requirement. So our thought was that we would take the existing technology and enhance and develop it to meet our need. As the initial systems were matured and the program matured, we did develop the technology outright to meet our requirements. So it kind of evolved over time.
Given the sense of urgency around getting this technology deployed, how did your team prioritize the requirements throughout the service delivery?
Well, it was a very fast-paced environment, and so one thing that we did is we had a stand-up meeting every morning. The captains...
Did you literally stand up?
Literally stood up around a conference line, and we would chat
that
about what was...
That will keep a meeting fast.
Yeah, it will. And so we would discuss the priorities for the day, the JAIDO office, central command, the engineers out at the test range, the acquisition managers, logisticians, all the deputy program managers for the different technology areas were all on the phone, and we said, what's going on now? What do we need to approach today? What's the priority? So it was a continuous loop. We all had the deployment and the fielding date in mind, so that was what we were executing toward.
And it really emphasized that it was a cross-functional team doing this acquisition throughout.
It was, across the services too. You had folks from all of the military services, the Navy, Marines, everybody participated.
How do you plan for testing and evaluation of the service, given this was, it was a commercial technology, but one you weren't as familiar with, so how did you test and evaluate throughout?
Well, so the challenge was figuring out what we needed at the same time evaluating what existed, and so test and evaluation was very important in that process. So we tested to see what the technology could do at that moment, and then how much further we could take it, considering the threats and the different classified details we were receiving from theater, you know, how does it mm-hmm. need to change? And so each testing event would inform what was to come, the follow-on development, the next testing of the iteration. So it was a continuous loop mm-hmm. of advancement and enhancement.
Did you actually, so you had some soldiers piloting the technology?
We did. So we had kind of training modules that would actually have not all the hardware there, but it was, you know, the service members could try to see, you know, for weight, they would wear it. We would send it to the proving grounds or the testing range to see if it could jam certain radio frequencies. Mm-hmm. We put it on armored vehicles. So there was a lot of extensive testing, and it was to replicate what it would experience in field, you know, temperature, different things like that.
In the end, was it something that the soldiers wear, or is it on the vehicles?
So there was essentially two versions. So there was the dismounted, the soldier would actually wear, it had a huge antenna that would protrude there, and there was also the vehicle mounted. So of course the weight requirements and, mm-hmm. and the heat requirements, some of those things varied. So the different spirals were dedicated to either dismounted, mounted. The most mature program, after I left actually, the Spiral 3.3 had a system of systems where all the systems talked to each other, and they would wear them, it would be on buildings, it would be fixed. So it evolved over time.
Did you have unexpected problems, you know, throughout? And did you have the support of the Navy leadership kind of addressing some of those problems?
Leadership was engaged across the board. As I mentioned, we had the stand-up calls, so everybody was on the same page on a daily basis. But a lot of the procurement processes and the reviews that we were required to do at DOD were streamlined. The captain in charge of the program had regular briefings at the Pentagon and with senior military officials. And we also had constant contact with the military officers in theater, actually in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the budget and procurement legal folks were all on the same page, understood where we were, and everybody was aware of how we were progressing.
That's really important. So everyone had the goal of saving lives, but there must have been some competing interests at times between the team and leadership and vendor on some of the more minor issues. So how did you resolve those throughout this acquisition?
Well, as I mentioned, there was Central Command, JAIDO, the J-Crew Program Office, we had Navy, service members, Marines, Army, all had to coordinate on the specifications and the capabilities that we required. And there were competing priorities. Of course, a particular service member might have a job and they would want it to weigh a certain amount, or they've experienced it overheating in certain circumstances. So everybody had what they wanted the next iteration to entail. And so we were constantly collaborating across agencies and testing and evaluating the solution to make sure that everybody was on the same page. And it was interesting with the source selection proceedings, because many times I would have 20 plus engineers and military officials from different military services participating in technical evaluation panels, and so we had to establish consensus ratings and agree on whatever the resulting technology would be, and so it was very important to establish rules of engagement and keep everybody involved.
So most procurement officers probably don't work on procurements that, you know, in support of life-saving technologies, but How would a contracting officer, maybe in a civilian agency, apply some of these agile techniques to their own requirements?
Well, I think it was important, although we didn't get a lot of lead time in defining our requirements, if that's possible to do so, so that everybody can contribute to whatever it is that we seek to procure in the end, or what the wanted outcome could be. Keeping the focus on that desired outcome and also being flexible in the approach, because things change, some of the inputs change, and you have to be flexible. And we had a really good experience working with industry as partners to actually achieve our goals and maintaining open lines of communication, which was helpful. And then just being willing to adjust and change direction, because you need to continually reassess in your progress and also your accomplishments. So if everybody's engaged and you are flexible to what the potential outcome is and whatever you're striving to achieve, then even at a civilian agency that doesn't deal with wartime requirements or the type of urgency that I did, could also replicate this and be very effective with their procurement solutions.
So thanks for sharing your story today. You should be really proud of your work.
Thank you.
As we heard today from Tara, contracting officers often have a direct impact on delivering really important missions. And we know that there are many unsung heroes out there in the federal government, and we want to hear your story. Everyone who has an innovative strategy for driving procurement performance is really encouraged to join our podcast series. And I'd love to hear from you about your experiences so we can increase awareness and adoption of proven techniques. So share your experiences with me and learn from your peers by visiting buyersclub.ideascale.com and clicking TechFAR Hub Use Cases. Access curated expertise, prices paid data, and contract vehicles for categorized goods and services by visiting the Acquisition Gateway at hallways.cap.gsa.gov. As always, thanks to everyone for tuning in, and listen for us next time, where we'll continue to take you behind the buy.